let's have an official hello to everybody and welcome to our really nice niche Friday night get together, the Vajrasattva kind of check-in and then guided meditation, guided purification.
I've
That's
just actually come back from Laodai, so it's been very. I was fortunate to go on the second pilgrimage this year, but we were fortunate. I was fortunate to attend Charak's teachings Sunday a week ago in Kathmandu.
At Laodo, did you, was it like a retreat there or?
We attended at Tame. We attended the Manirimdu festivities, and then we went to Laodai, and the nuns from Tamo were doing Nungne there. So I was able to attend a couple of sessions with them, and we broadcasted the Chenrezig practice from there. It was the whole thing was just sensational.
Wow, how fantastic. I am super rejoicing for you. That's really, it seems, I don't know, if it's the times and I'm just more aware of them, or if there are more pilgrimages at the moment, or somehow it just seems like they're really taken off these pilgrimages
I think so.
really great teachers. Yeah, so we've got a few students going off to pilgrimage with Geshe Zopa in Indonesia just quite soon, but
I'm attending that.
Oh, there's LTC people going to that as well. So, and then we've got the pilgrimage with Geshe Saltram to India that's coming up in October. Yes, yeah, so that's a whole different thing from a small pilgrimage. This is the big, mega, huge, massive, ultra pilgrimage.
Yes, we were six people.
Yeah, well, this is 180.
Oh my goodness.
I know, it's incomprehensible. Yes, so amazing to hear about pilgrimages and to rejoice at all the pilgrimage activity of everybody. Part of the Discovering Buddhism completion activities is actually to go on pilgrimage. That was one of the things that Rinpoche really wanted us to be able to do. That Discovering Buddhism, you know, it's not just a academic program. There is the academic side of things to learn what to meditate on and what the correct conclusions are as we're implementing the Lam Rim, but also the integration practices. So part of the integration practices was a couple of the Nongdros, the 100,000 Vajrasattvas and 100,000 prostrations. So that's as part of the completion activities for Discovering Buddhism, otherwise known as the hundreds and thousands. Since Geshe Zopa's been guiding us in the Nongdros, it's really come into its own. So doing the Vajrasattva Nongdro together as a group, I think, has been really lovely and really supportive like that. And of course, the other completion activity, integration activity for Discovering Buddhism is to go on pilgrimage. For a long time, I thought, oh, I'd never be able to do that. But then, just like I'm a late bloomer, so just in the nick of time, I've been able to go on some pilgrimages and really can see the benefit that the power of place, the power of being in a place, changes you without you even being aware of it. And you get that the blessing of the holy beings that are there, all the unseen beings that are there. Geshe Zopa would often say, all of your channels and chakras are blessed by that place, by the beings in that place. So it's a very tangible way of integrating the Dharma, but of having an experience of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So in our refuge, where I take, refuge in the Dakas and Dakinis of secret mantra, in all the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, everybody, it's the Dakas and Dakinis that reside at those places that we're blessed by. So yes, it's an incredible benefit. And then for those of you that don't get to go overseas to the various holy sites, there is a most excellent plan B, which Lama Zopa Rinpoche also encouraged us to do, which is to do pilgrimage in one spot in your gompa and set up altars to each of the holy places and just carry your chair around in the gompa to all those holy places. And then and do the same thing as you would do on pilgrimage, all the prayers and things. So we're actually doing this, a pilgrimage in a day in our gompa, in July, on the anniversary of first wheel turning day, Buddha's first teaching. So it's a special holy day, one of the most holy days of the year. And we're going to be doing an actual pilgrimage in a day in our gompa, just like Rinpoche encouraged us. Yes, the blessing is a bit more ephemeral, but it's nevertheless there. And Rinpoche said it's a powerful kind of blessing, and especially on a holy day, more so. So Annie, see if you can come along to that one. Should be just the ticket. In the spirit of supporting our spiritual community, everything that happens on Nongdro stays on Nongdro. We can share how we're going. It's all part of this path to enlightenment, for the benefit of all. With that, remembering our bodhicitta motivation and our big aim, how is everybody going? How are we going? Let's have a little bit of a group check-in.
Well, I'll kick off. I've been going slowly, slowly, but every day I do a bunch of them, and I just find it's funny because I used, and I said this last time, I used to shy away from doing the long Vajrasattva mantra because it was too long, and now it just sort of trips off your tongue, and it takes you a couple of minutes to do 21, and it used to be, oh my gosh, I'll be here forever. Sort of thing, but it's just so much easier doing it. And I'm getting very good at, using my mala with my fourth finger on my left hand. And in the beginning, I just couldn't do it. But I think it's sort of getting this muscle memory and this brain memory and things like that. But I do have to concentrate because if I'm not sitting and thinking hard about it, I tend to lapse into other mantras. It's like my brain's a bit Mickey Mouse, so. Quite often, if I catch myself doing the wrong one, I just start again.
Francesca, I'm exactly the same as you. If I don't have a certain level of awareness, I will find that I've been saying another mantra instead. And then it's like, so it's kind of good because you can't get into too much autopilot. Got to have this awareness. And it kind of cleared up a mystery to me because that verse of how to recite the mantra of any mantra, not too loud, not too soft, not adding in syllables or losing syllables. I was just thinking of Om Mani Padme Hum. I'm thinking, well, how would you lose a syllable in Om Mani Padme Hum? But I wasn't thinking far enough. It's nice. It's a thank you for being such a long mantra because then we really have to put our attention onto it.
Yeah, I noticed for a long time actually, I've been a little bit lazy about. So you know how there's the four opponent powers when we recite our Vajrasattvas, and I always kind of went, "Oh yeah, I know about them," but it didn't really sink in. And then I've been thinking about it. I was reading. It said, each component actually purifies the very specific effects of. When you have a full set of negative karma, like your environmental effects, the habit to repeat it again, being actually born in the lower realms, and then I thought about it, I'm like, wow, if I'm really slack and I'm only focusing on one, I might purify that particular effects, like being, say, born in a lower realm because I say the mantra really well, but I'm not doing my regret really well, or doing my I'm doing my refuge a lot better because I'm doing my double degrees, but then I'm not really doing my resolve very well. So that means I've got lots of completion karma sitting around. So in the next life, I will experience the effects of completion karma because I didn't put effort in the regret or the resolve. So that's been
Yes.
something I've been really thinking about.
Yeah, because it's comprehensive, isn't it? And so, I mean, what brings us to do the practice anyway is a couple of those things, but rarely is it all four of the opponent powers. So it's great to have, I mean, they're like an ultimate checklist, aren't they, to make sure that we've got all the elements of the purification in there.
And I'm like, I swear I've heard this before. I'm like, I've been hearing this for so long, and it's only taken 20 years for the penny to finally drop, right? So I'm like, okay, something's working. Purification certainly happened. Like, I'm finally hearing the teaching. So now my thing is, even though I'm only saying my minimum Vajrasattvas, whether it's the 21 in the morning and the 21 in the evenings, whatever, I try and pick up one thing that I really regret. I don't want to do it again. And I'm like, And it's changed it. It's certainly changed the practice. So I don't concentrate on the quantity. I go for the quality. But I'm like, each time I try and think of a specific action, no matter how small and insignificant it is, or if I see something on TV, I'm like, oh, I've done that in the past. Let's use that today,
Yeah, that makes it, that's fantastic, Demi, because it makes it, I mean, all four of the opponents are in the actual Vajrasattva little practice that we do, but not necessarily overtly. So to have this checklist to have it overtly, and it's a very interesting point that you brought out that, our life is a whole lot of mixed results, and those are mixed results because either our merit wasn't complete merit, so we have a mixed result, or our purification wasn't complete, and so we still have residue. I mean, that's part of the regret. The main thing about the regret, remember, isn't the ordinary cause and effect. It's we regret what we the future results coming to us. So you're noticing all the different types of future results and going, I don't want them. So that's the main form of regret in the four opponent powers, is to go, I don't want those things. And then how can we absolutely ensure that we don't get those results, the negative ones?
Hi everyone. I really enjoyed the fire purification a couple of weeks ago and thought that was a really lovely reset. And then really quickly went downhill. But, I'm here tonight, so it's just this constant reset for me. But similar to Franziska, I found it really easy to memorize this actually whole booklet, which I wasn't expecting. And so I can kind of take it with me everywhere and not need the booklet with me. So that was really lovely that can now get through most of it. Some of the dedications at the end are a little bit fuzzy, but yeah, there's been something about this process that I've been able to memorize, which yeah, is not normally something that I do.
Oh, that is great because the whole path to enlightenment's in there. Yeah, so that's literally your life raft in the sea of samsara. You've got your life raft, and that is great. And having memorized it like that, because also, as Rosemary pointed out, that the printing's very small and very faint. But also the thing that you said, Catherine, we do a purification. It's really fantastic. It clears out everything, and then it's almost like into that vacuum inflows the whole next batch. No. And someone did ask me once, so what's with that? Because it says everything's purified, so it's wrong. Everything's not purified, and they almost lost their confidence in the practice. And Geshe Zopa pointed out that it's like if you're taking medicine, you have your medicine, your antibiotics one day, but you've got to take them each day because it's fixing it, but it's going to take a while. Or if you have a shower, it's not like I've had a shower, I'm clean, I don't have to do that anymore for the rest of my life. It's like, yeah, of course you're going to need a shower in a few days. It's not that anything's going wrong, or that it's actually a natural thing that we're going to have to keep purifying. So it's like we need the Vajrasattva practice because we wash everything off, and then through the force of habit, we create more negativities, and it also means the more deeper, darker ones come back up again, come to our awareness, whereas before there wasn't the space for them to come up to our awareness. You have another Vajrasattva shower.
And I think the process, like I've been quite conscious of it, where in the past it, comes and goes. But I think, yeah, it's all part of the journey.
Yeah, that's right. Being conscious of it without even necessarily having to do anything about it, but just notice it as a process that we go through. The Vajrasattva practice, the nature of purifying is becoming aware of the negativities and all the muck. That's not necessarily a pleasant thing. But it is part of the purifying and becoming aware of the process and not succumbing to the negativities like that. That is a big deal because that's actually changing our response to negativities and suffering. That in itself is part of the purification. Similar to like if you've done Yungnaes, anyone, Demi's done Yungnaes here, probably a few of others, that it's that you, and June too, that's right, you're going purposefully into a difficulty, and part of you going, this is insane. Another part of you knows that by facing it and going into it instead of fighting it, that's the purification.
Yeah, so I kind of slowed down, I think around February. And I think possibly it was also to do with the fact that I knew I didn't have to get it done by a certain date. So I kind of just Took the foot off the accelerator a little bit. But then I was talking to someone who has told me they have done 100,000 recitations. So there is someone in our group who has gotten to 100,000, and that was just like, it just kind of inspired me because it was like, oh my God, if they can do it, so can I. So it was a really good motivator for me, and I rejoiced in their efforts, and it just kind of gave me a little oomph that, yeah, you can do this. So I'm back with a bit more renewed energy.
Oh, great. That's good. Well, Geshe-la did say to blitz it in the beginning, to start off with a lot of energy. And then the trick is that when you start losing energy, to just never miss anything. So even if it goes flat, to keep the continuity in there, then the nature of how you approach a practice changes. And so when we get kind of tired or we lose our energy, often what we try and do is fix it or approach it just like we would do with ordinary life. So push harder is one of the things that we do, and then we recoil about that and go no, and then push harder and then go no, and then get guilty. And then the guilt set in and all this kind of ordinary worldly way of dealing with these things. But actually we've got to be as if we're Vajrasattva. What would Vajrasattva say? So Vajrasattva is here to help us and encourage us. Yeah, if you get a bit the energy flags, Vajrasattva doesn't care about you any less. Vajrasattva still cares, still in there. We keep doing it, but change the way we do it, and probably not push. Still find the way to enjoy it.
It just, as I said, just kind of renewed that energy about, yeah, come on, you're wasting time. Yeah, death could happen. Get
Death can
going.
happen. And also, we forget, because when we get tired, we forget about the joy of the practice too, don't we? Yeah, it is one of the joys of life. Not one of the you should be doing kind of things. One of the things when we get a bit low, because like I was saying last time, I was kind of low in my energy. I went the other way and started thinking about death and impermanence. And there's nothing like the threat of death and impermanence to put a firecracker under you. So I went and I went and got my will done. So I got my will read done. I was like, how can I be a class leader and call myself a Buddhist if I haven't actually acknowledged death and impermanence and done something about it, like get my will done? So kind of slap myself into shape there, and that kind of helps. Yeah, the energy comes naturally when you think something's going to be taken away. What if you couldn't do nongdrows? What? I did have something. I know a couple of weeks ago, Dean, you asked me about the wisdoms, the five wisdoms, and we talked a bit about the Dhyani Buddhas a little bit last time as well. So I thought I could say a little bit about that. But also just this last thing with the visualization and our experience of purification. What really came to me was how we do the purification. First, it's the nectar shower, and then it's the light. And I started thinking this is the real kindness of the Vajrasattva practice, that first it's like this healing nectar, like a healing balm that pacifies all of the negativities, and it's nectar, so it's blissful, and it heals all of the trauma of samsara. And so it's not a jolting kind of thing. It's a naturally healing, blissful thing. And then once we've recovered from that, from the hurt and trauma of being samsaric in a samsaric world with samsaric attitudes, and all of the sharpness and discomfort of that, the nectar balm comes, and then we get illuminated. Then the wisdom comes, and it's a really different approach, because normally when we recognize we've done a mistake, we're quite hard on ourselves, quite judgmental, quite kind of pointy and sharp. And this is the whole total opposite. This is like when you hurt yourself and your parents, pat you and go, it's okay. So it's like Vajrasattva's healing balm, the nectar. like that, it's healing trauma. It's healing the deep trauma of samsara. Most of the time, we're not even aware of that. We're just being reactive and being, if we use the same parlance, we're being triggered all the time. And so then we act badly and we overestimate all the negative things. We overestimate all of the good qualities. We do all of this because we're literally triggered by by everything in samsara and our disturbing emotions. And so this Vajrasattva practice, the healing nectar balm, it really is quite something. And then from that, then we've got the space to get the wisdom so that we can make sure it doesn't happen again. We don't get triggered again. And I think that's really healthy because we can't just come at it by understanding things. We've got to come at it by having that experience of feeling loved and safe and have a real experience of enlightenment like that. Then we can go and understand what the heck is happening and start working with it. A couple of things with the wisdoms and this process too, when we think about who we are, that in Buddhism, being that who we are, a self or a being, actually, rather than think of ourselves as a thing or a being, to think of ourselves as a process. So who we are is a process, not an inherent thing. And I think that's a wonderful way to work with our kind of nature and our conventional reality, because we're going from the basis of our clouded, kind of confused mind, but all the potential's there, but it's undifferentiated. And then the path, which is normally the path we only kind of discover where we're going and how we're going to do it with problems, is reacting to problems and difficulties. Our first steps of the path manifest as problems or as suffering, and then that gives us the incentive to do something about it. And like the little sand grain there that stimulates the pearl to grow. And so then we try and put everything into practice on the path, try and take it from theory into our life and our experience and go through a transformation. And then the result is this, like all the fully fledged wisdoms, all of the aggregates purified. So it's not like they're separate things. That's the process. That's like the process of becoming a Buddha, becoming Vajrasattva. So I found that really helpful to, instead of thinking, well, who am I? Because I often have identity crisis, is to think, well, what am I? Process. Who are we? We're a process. And that's also, so then all of the different components of that, of the five wisdoms, the five wisdom families come into that, how we bring all of those types of qualities, bring them from just being a potential into the five wisdoms. So what do you reckon about that? Does it make any sense?
It triggers something that I read this morning as well. It really links in well with karma and cause and effect. And Rinpoche says we need to take every possible opportunity to create the cause of happiness, even with our most commonplace actions. When you talk about a process, that's everything's cause and effect.
Yep,
Being an
that's right.
ex-process engineer, everything's cause and
Well,
effect, right? So it works
everything
really
is
well.
cause and effect. You're
Yeah,
absolutely
yeah.
right. And actually, what a human being is, that the function of a human being is to act. That's kind of what a human being is a function to act. This, yeah, that's right. It's cause and effect all the way, isn't it? So,
Yeah. Not just on and off. It's not just binary. We've got so many things going on in mind at any given time
Yep.
that
So we're experiencing results, we're creating causes, like Demi was saying, we've got all the different types of results, environmental results, habitual results. And most of the time we look at the negative results, they're the ones that get our attention. But actually the fact that we've come across, that we've met the Vajrasattva practice, that's also a result. So that doesn't come from nowhere. That means absolutely we're picking up where we left off. So that should give us some confidence too, that we're like re-meeting this practice.
And not just a process, I just see myself as a work in progress, you know. So it's just the action of doing it, but it's also the action of becoming, you know, and putting it all into place.
There's different aspects of it, but they're not separate, you know. So Francesca Buddha isn't going to be like Francesca turns into someone else. It's just the process gets better and clearer. Oh, that's right. Just before we do the meditation, this all comes from under our resources tab. Everything's under here. So either the catch-up classes or the sound files and the videos, there they all are. All the pocket practice with all there. And how many pages? 3 pages. Tell me that you know those pages are there. This is the archival resources of Lungri Tonpa Sena, so that you've got something to go on. Do your own little mini retreats and be guided every step of the way. So all of the meditations, I really try and include these screen shares, so that even if you don't have an altar, you just have an offering bowl, and the altar is there in the screen share. So your computer becomes a pop-up altar.
I forgot to mention to you, but Venerable Elsa, when we're chatting, she said she thinks it's wonderful that Lungri Tonpa Center is inspiring people to do Nyungdrals together. Because she said, like, before that, everyone kind of tried to do it on their own, and it was so, it becomes very hard and difficult, and you've got no one to turn to. But when, if more and more of us start doing them in groups, she thinks we'll have great success.
Yeah, that's so nice to hear, because I think that is quite unusual. And this is, thanks to Geshe Zopa wanting to kind of guide us as a group, and also the good timing. But it's true, it's very rare. It's something that, like this other group in Spain that wanted to talk to me, they want to do Nongdros, and I spent like an hour long Zoom conversation of how the Spanish Buddhists are going to do Nongdros, and they were amazed to hear about doing it together as a group. Because I looked on their website, it was fantastic, their program was so inspiring. I'm like, oh, I want to do that. And I'm like, what are they talking to me for? But that was one of the main things of how we actually do it, and what it's like doing it as a group. I don't know if this is like part of bringing Buddhism to the West. It changes its form. It doesn't change the essence of the Buddhism, but it changes its form according to the people. And this may very well be one of those things, that having a group, like doing Nyungnaes as a group.
Samsarics Anonymous.
Yes. Hello. Welcome to Samsarics Anonymous. I'm a samsaric being. And the higher power is within. Thank you so much, everybody. I've got to say, I always feel so much better after these practice at the end than at the beginning. At the beginning, I come all like frazzled and overwhelmed by the week. And at the end, I'm like, wow, I feel great. Let's go out and work for sentient beings.